and welcome to episode 204 of Board Game Blitz, a podcast about all things board games that you can listen to in less time than it takes to stuff the latest and greatest cell phone into that tiny pocket in your jeans. It isn't going to happen, trust me. Board Game Blitz is sponsored by Gray Fox Games. This week, we're talking about games that fit in your pocket. First, we discuss a couple games we played recently, Murder Mystery Party, the Night Hunter game, and Freelancers, a Crossroads game. Then, we talk about some of our favorite games that you only need a pair of pants to carry around. And now, here are your hosts,
Amby
and Crystal. One quick announcement before we hop into the episode, and that is that, right now, right as this episode drops, we are in Las Vegas, which is not really that newsworthy for me because I live there, but Amby's here too, and we're both attending Dice Tower West this weekend.
Woohoo! Dice Tower West and Vegas.
Yay! Yes, I am staying in Vegas and attending the convention. If you all happen to be listening to this episode when it drops and you're at the convention, which, like, props to you for listening to our episode while also attending the convention. Not necessary, but we heart you real hard for doing that. Please, please, please come find us at the con and say hello. Like, I know we've had many, many, many people over the years be like, oh, I saw you at this event, but I was too scared to come up and say hi. Please come say hi. I promise we're both very approachable. Like, Amby is, if you want someone like that's less intimidating, go talk to Amby because she's definitely less in your face than I am. But I, if you want someone that will just take over the conversation so you don't have to worry about doing it yourself, I will do that for you. So...
Yeah, in that sense, Crystal might be less intimidating because, like, I guess freeze up and...
Honestly, they should approach both of us because you're easygoing and you can put them at ease. And then I can just carry the conversation for everyone because I get so nervous that I just can't stop talking. So, yes, everyone come say hi to us. If you want to play a game, hit us up. We are going to be playing games all weekend and we would love to play a game with you if the time and place arises. So, yeah, we're excited to see everybody there.
Disclaimer, I might not be playing mini games, but I'll be there and say hi. Recently, I got a review copy of Murder Mystery Party, the Night Hunter game, which is published by University Games, designed by Jordan Goddard and Mandy Goddard and Ryan Shoon. This is a murder mystery game, if you can't tell by the title.
What? I'm shocked. The name did not give that away at all.
Yeah, so it's one or more players, ages 14 and up, and it says 240 to 300 minutes. It took me like 2 hours total. There's four chapters in the game, and they all took around like 30 minutes each on average. So this is a murder mystery detective game. The age range, I think, is appropriate because it involves murder, and there are some graphic photos and documents and stuff. It's basically like a crime scene investigator. You're investigating a cold case and a not so cold case. So there's like lots of papers. You're getting sent all of these paperwork, these files, case files with different things in them. I've talked about other games like this before in the genre, but like there's lots of reading case file, lots of envelopes to open with letters and stuff. It also comes with a field guidebook and a UV light for looking at hidden things, which is kind of cool. Like the UV light, ooh, it says it's for looking at fingerprints and like other hidden things. So that was neat. Like I got to look for fingerprints using the UV light. And
that is cool.
Yeah. So this is like one of those games that's good for people who like murder mystery stories or like mystery detective stories, which I actually haven't read many of those in my adult life, but I've started reading some mystery novels now and I do enjoy them. So yes, I because I play these games, I was like, oh yeah, I should probably read some books too. But yeah, so like if you like reading murder mystery novels, it kind of feels like an interactive murder mystery book. There's puzzles in there too, like you're looking through doing some like matching puzzles and stuff, but it's not as puzzly as like an escape room game or something. You're looking through these case files, and I found myself later in the later chapters like seeing something and then I'm like, oh wait, like looking back through past things and like flipping through the files to see if there were connections or things I remembered. And so it kind of felt like I was a detective, like because I remembered something from when I was doing it before. So I played the games all, I think, within a week or two, so it was all pretty close together, so I didn't like forget about earlier parts of the case. You do want to remember everything in the cases and you do look back because it's all a connected case cases that you're looking through. The way the solutions work, it's mostly paper stuff, but there's an online website where you check the solutions. You're not inputting anything. It just has links and you has multiple choice solutions. So like if you didn't know and you like click the solution button, you kind of see what the possible solutions are. So that could kind of spoil you a little bit if you click it too early. But yeah, and when you click on the correct solution, it tells you correct. There's also hints online. So that's what online are. There's also some supplemental materials online in some chapters where it has like some other letters online that aren't in the box itself. So I enjoyed it. Some of the puzzles I enjoyed more than others. Some of the solutions were a little bit of a stretch and didn't feel as connected, or like they didn't make as much sense to me. But overall, I enjoyed it. It's about murder. And so like, definitely, if you don't like games about murder, or like if you this is not for kids, there are photos and descriptions of bodies and stuff. Also, for replayability, you can play through it to be able to repackage it for other people to play. But there's some things that you're supposed to fold or write on, but you can play it so that you don't do that. I didn't end up folding or writing on the things. There aren't any reset instructions that I could find, though. And there's lots of envelopes and folders that you're like opening and that you might want to all have spread out on the table at all times. Feel like a true detective. So that might be hard to reset. I don't know if they'll add that later. I mean, it's probably easy to add reset instructions, but I ended up keeping all the envelopes together because I would like open it, look there, and then put it back in. And then like, so then when I was flipping through all things, I'd be looking back through the old envelopes, which made it kind of hard. But yeah, it was fun. It felt like, yeah, if you want that detective feel, this is another series of murder mystery games, Murder Mystery Party, the Night Hunter game. I don't know how good the other games in this series are, but it looks like there's other ones there too. But yeah, I got this as a review copy from University Games, so thanks to them for the review copy. And it was fun. I played solo, as I do with these detective games, but I could see playing with other people, like all looking at different parts, because there's a lot of stuff to read, and then like telling each other, comparing notes and stuff.
It's interesting though, because the title, like to me, if I hear murder mystery party, like the word party, yeah, to me, I'm not saying that it's a bad title per se, but when I hear that type of title, I'm expecting more of the like dinner party type, yeah, things where there's more like of a social aspect to it, right? Mm-hmm. Where like you play with multiple people and you have to talk to other people. But like the fact that a game with party in the title can be played solo seems like that's not much of a party. But I imagine, yeah, the things that you're investigating likely maybe took place at a party.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks so like it's the other ones. The other ones were called Murder Mystery Party Case File Puzzles.
Okay.
And then they shortened it to Murder Mystery Party. So yeah, I don't know why party is in there.
I mean, it's a good name. It's probably good for Googling. And yeah, no, I'm no shade to University Games. It seems odd that a game with party in the title can be played solo, because that's generally a sad party. But in this case, apparently it was an enjoyable one.
Yeah, it's not one of those parties where you're role playing as the different characters and one of you is the murderer. This is a party for detectives who want to solve cases.
A party for lonely detectives, which a lot of us are. So, yeah. All right. Well, I recently got to try Freelancers, a Crossroads game, the, I believe, newest Crossroads game from Plaid Hat Games. Ooh. You all have heard me wax poetic about Crossroads games from Plaid Hat over the years many, many times. I have not played all of the Crossroads games, but I tend to like them a lot. And one of the previous titles that I especially loved was Forgotten Waters. And Freelancers shares a lot of mechanical DNA with Forgotten Waters. They are very different experiences. But in Freelancers, you and the other players, somewhere between 3 and 7, similar to Forgotten Waters, are all adventurers going on a Dungeons and Dragons-like adventure. But that's really doing it a disservice. Like that, to me, if I heard that description, I would be like, that sounds kind of generic and boring. This game is not generic or boring in any way. Like, imagine if someone took a D&D party and made it fully ridiculous. and then threw in some curse words here and there. When you have to kind of give it permission to do that. But, like, I don't want to spoil anything. So, like, the most shocking moment came at the very end of the scenario we played. And I nearly peed my pants. It was so funny. Like, who wrote this? I mean, it was designed by Donald Schultz. I imagine there were multiple people involved in writing the dialogue. But similar to Forgotten Waters, I haven't even explained the game at all. Y'all, I'm sorry. I fell in love with this one. So, in Freelancers, you're going on this adventure. You each pick a character, like a race and a job title, essentially, but there's like tons and tons of different jobs, and they all have their own individual sheets on a pad that you tear off and write on. And then those sheets also have places for you to gain skills throughout the course of the game. And then as you gain skills and other things, you'll unlock experience points. And then at the very end of the game, if the group is successful, you look at how many experience points you individually have earned, and then you get to read a little blurb at the end that regards your character specifically. So there's little bits of story for each of the individual characters as well as the group as a whole. As you're adventuring, you are using a spiral-bound book to go from place to place. And you also have a pad that is your map, essentially, like the map of the world. In Forgotten Waters, it was a board with tiles. In this game, it's simply a pad that has like a drawn path on it, and it's branching. You have lots of options for where you can go and what you can do, but the group has to decide where to go. You spend time to go to different places. The time mechanism is interesting because you're pulling chits out of a bag, and sometimes those are good things, and sometimes they are bad things. So when you're walking around the world, you kind of have to balance whether you want to like go the long way and possibly pull more bad things out of the bag or not. Then when you are actually at a location, you go to that spiral-bound book, and all of the characters' standees get placed on different actions in the book. Then you go and you execute those actions. Some actions are required, some actions only one person can do, some actions multiple people can do, but they all generally will progress the story in some way. Sometimes you can stay on the same location for multiple rounds, but usually you'll move on after a single round and go to a new location. I'm being incredibly vague about the specifics of the characters and the story, because that is where the joy of this game absolutely lives. It is subversive and surprising, and it's making fun of kind of classic adventuring, role-playing fantasy adventures, but like in a loving and lighthearted way. Like it's clearly making fun of the genre, but not punching down. So the name of the game is Freelancers, and that is what you are. You're basically a ragtag group of people who are just looking for work. And that is kind of the premise of a lot of D&D campaigns, but you people are clearly not the like cream of the crop when it comes to adventuring. So you'll kind of, it seems like you'll take just about any job that's thrown your way. And all of the shenanigans that come with that are included. It's so good. It does have a companion app, just like Forgotten Waters did as well, and there is spoken narration and dialogue for tons and tons of the content in the game. That does slow down the action, so if you're a person who needs to be doing things nonstop in a game to be engaged, I could see how this could be a little slow. But I really love hearing the voiced narration and the character stuff. I think it's hilarious, and in this game especially, it's very funny. So if you are looking for a relatively chill experience with some really cool takes on that like fantasy adventuring trope, I absolutely recommend Freelancers. It is easy to learn and pick up. You can kind of just set it up and the game will kind of really direct you to how to do things. It's so good. I just love it. Plaid Hat, you knocked it out of the park again. I can't wait to play it again. It's so fun. So yeah, that is Freelancers from Plaid Hat Games.
Cool.
Since we are currently at a board game convention, we thought we might talk about games that are incredibly portable. And we've discussed travel-friendly games before, but that's kind of loose and could mean a lot of things. So today we're going to narrow things down to games that can fit in your pocket. And that narrows things down quite a bit. And when we're talking pockets here, y'all, don't get all cheeky. We're not talking that teeny tiny pocket in your jeans that I referenced in the intro. table. We know that almost nothing fits in there. Clearly, like a coin fits in that pocket. And we're not talking about cargo pants where you could probably fit, you know, an entire ticket to ride in there or whatever. Like, we're talking about an average sized pocket on an average sized pair of pants, which probably means they're men's pants because women's pants never get good pockets.
Well, I specifically pick pants that will fit my phone. So.
Oh, that's, I mean, that's smart, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I try and have pants that have pockets on both the front and back, because a lot of women's pants, they'll have back pockets, but they, even jeans sometimes won't, they'll have a fake front pocket. Yeah. And I'm like, why? Yeah, like, just put a pocket in here.
Anyway, the first one I thought about was actually one that I got as a review copy last year, but it's Pocketbook Adventures, which is a solo, it's a puzzly book game where you're like dungeon crawling, but you use a pencil and this book, which is a little spiral bound book that fits in your pocket. I tried, it even fit in my jeans pocket. And like, you're like going through these little puzzly rooms and defeating monsters, and you use the pencil and you close your eyes and try to hit a target. And that's the mechanism instead of rolling a die. So I played through like half of it. I now only play it on travel when I'm like traveling. I don't actually put it in my pocket though. I don't actually put any games in my pocket.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I don't know about you, but like I carry a purse, and so generally I'm gonna throw things in my purse before I throw them in my pocket. But yeah. It is nice to be able to put something in your pocket, you know, sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but speaking of purse, back when I used to carry a purse everywhere, I had things that were always in my purse, like a Rubik's Cube, my keys. But
Bambi, I totally carry a Rubik's Cube around in my purse now.
But games, I had a deck of cards in my purse all the time, and that fits in a pocket too. So
yeah, like, and that's a deck of cards, so many games, right?
A lot of games. Yeah. So that's like the only game that I actually always carried around is a deck of cards. But I no longer carry a purse as much because I've been carrying, well, I'm going back to carrying a purse, but I was carrying a backpack for a lot of times because it was my diaper bag.
Yeah, I think when you have kids, you basically, you're like, a purse is not enough anymore.
Yep.
Some of the games that I really loved and played a lot earlier in my hobby gaming career, like when I first started kind of building my own collection and started taking that collection to places to play games with other people, there were a few small games that were staples for me and that got brought out all the time. Love Letter was one of them. I think everybody kind of went through a Love Letter phase at some point. Like, Love Letter is a good game, and we've all played it, it feels like, at this point, and I'd never see it getting played anymore. But I really did love Love Letter, and I thought it was a lot of fun. Another one for me that always hit the table at game night for the longest time was Quix. It was, I mean, aside from Yahtzee, I think it was the first roll and write game that I kind of really fell in love with as a hobby gamer. And we would break that one out at game night all the time in my game group that used to meet weekly, to the point where like I ordered the extra pads from Europe that weren't available in the States. Mm-hmm. And then I got the deluxe larger size edition of Quix that didn't fit in your pocket.
You can't talk
about
it. Yeah,
right? But that's the thing, I owned two copies of the game. That's how much I liked it. And another one for me was Zombie Dice, which is a little like canister. So it's a little harder to fit in a pocket because it's not flat. But it definitely, like, it would fit in a pocket. It would just look a little more awkward. I actually was on the phone with my sister the other day, and in the background, my nephews were playing Zombie Dice, which I gifted to them, I think, honestly, around the time my oldest nephew was born. Like, basically, as soon as my sister got pregnant, I started buying games for them. And my oldest nephew is now 8, and my younger nephew is 4. No, the older nephew is just turned 9, actually. Is he 9? Wow. Or did he turn 8? Oh my gosh, I should know this. He's 9 now, I think. He's 9. The young little one will be 5 soon. Yes, 9 and 5 is what they will be. But yeah, like, they were playing Zombie Dice. They love Zombie Dice, apparently. And you should have seen my face. My sister started cracking up because I literally was like, this is the day I've been waiting for. Like, when they were visiting recently, my nephew wanted to play my board games. He was like, Auntie Crystal, I want to play your games. And I was like, my time has come. So I'm getting a little off topic. But Zombie Dice is small, it's quick, it's easy to teach. And apparently a 4-year-old and a 9-year-old love it. So.
Oh, and that reminds me of Dice. And kids reminds me of Rory's Story Cubes fits in your pocket. So I have a game, or at least I don't know, there's a lot of different versions, but this is a it's a kind of more of an activity game, because I don't think there's like any winning, but you're rolling dice that have different pictures on them, and then you make a story out of the pictures that show up, but it's like good for kids. So the version I have is a little box. It's 9 dice and then a little box that like just fits those 9 dice with a little gap, and it's like a little magnetic closing box, so that could fit in your pocket. It's like slightly bigger than a deck of cards, I think. And then the box doubles as the dice tray for rolling the dice in. So it's like a travel version. I don't know if it's a travel version, but that's
pretty awesome though. Yeah. And yeah, mm-hmm. I guess like in theory, if you were like waiting for your table at a restaurant or whatever, and you know, the kiddos were bored, you could roll a couple dice and be like, okay, make up a story. And that feels like a good way to kill time.
Yeah. I've never actually brought it anywhere though. And I don't know where all the dice are because the kids bring them around all that.
It's house, going downhill fast, Amby. Rory's story cues. Oh, so I mentioned zombie dice, which is a cylindrical canister. Mm-hmm. Another weird-shaped game that I own and love that also fits in your pocket is The Potion, which Nicole Hoy of the former Great Way Games podcast, friends of ours, who we love, and we miss that podcast, but I still am very good friends with all the peeps from it. So hi, Great Way Games friends and fam. But yeah, Nicole Hoy taught that game to me at BGG Con, I want to say in 2018-ish, something like that. That no one else had like ever has heard of this game or has played it, but I got a copy of it and I take it. It's like a medicine bottle looking thing that you untwist the top and there's tokens inside of it. The game is played entirely in players' hands and with just 2 dice that you roll. So you only need a very small surface to roll the dice on, but everything else, the tokens are held in players' hands. So it's very little table space needed. You could play it like easily, like sitting around at a bar or whatever else, mm-hmm. and it's fun. I really like that one a lot.
Yeah, I played it once in 2018 too. I remember it looked like a medicine bottle. I was like, oh
yeah, cool. I actually have an expansion for it that I got directly from the publisher that makes it cooperative instead of competitive.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So if we're talking about pocket-sized games, we would be remiss if we did not mention some of our faves that we mention all the time around here. Button Shy games, the literal wallet games that are made up of 18 cards each, which we love a whole bunch of. Amby, do you have any particular favorites when it comes to Button Shy games?
Well, I only really started playing them recently because I hadn't really played any other than the ones that I streamed with you one time. I didn't own any until I got some for Black Friday. I bought some PNP ones, so I printed out 5 of those. So yeah, I have the ones that I have, I guess. I have Food Chain Island, Rove are solo ones I have, and then I have Sprawlopolis, Skulls of Sedlick, and Tussie Mussie. I haven't played Tussie Mussie yet with anyone other than you, which I played like online with you once. But Skulls of Sedlick is pretty neat, and my kid loves skeletons. So like I actually played it with him. He doesn't understand the scoring at all, but it seems like a neat game to play with other people who understand the scoring as well.
I'll have to try that one. I haven't played Skulls of Sedlick. Yeah, they have a lot of titles that I'm interested in that I haven't played. I also love Sprawlopolis, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. and then a couple of their 2-player games that I really love. Revolver Noir is one of my faves. My friend Kathy taught it to me and then gifted me her copy of it because she knew that I would play it more than she would, which was very kind of her. There are 2-player trick-taking games from Aaron Wilson, YI Otter and An Otter One. And Otter is like the animal. Mm-hmm. They're both pun names. So he hooked me with the names, but then also the games are really fun. YI Otter is relatively simple, but An Otter One is more complex. It's the second of the 2 trick-taking games, and it is really, really, really fun. And that one I don't hear get talked about as much when Button Shy games get mentioned. So I definitely wanted to give a shout out to that one.
I guess if you're talking about publishers that we talk about a lot, and like another one is Oink Games. These aren't quite as small. You need slightly bigger pockets. They don't fit in my jeans pockets, but well, actually some of the Oink Games come in thinner ones. Like my Kobayakawa Oink Game version is half the size, so it's a thin one, and that could probably fit in my pocket. But outside of that, most of them are like a couple inches thick box.
Yeah, like they're a little chonky. Yeah. I think most people could fit them in their pocket, but again, kind of similar to the round games, it would stick out a little.
Yeah, that would not be a comfortable pocket for me, but...
Yeah, you wouldn't want to like put it in your back pocket and sit down. That would not be fun. We've talked about Oink games ad nauseum, mm-hmm. but what are a couple of your favorite Oink games?
9 Tiles is my favorite one. That's a speed game, pattern matching speed. just pure speed. Yeah. I like Deep Sea Adventure is a push your luck game with a funny theme of sharing an oxygen tank and diving for treasure in a submarine. And you're trying to kind of use up everyone else's oxygen, but also survive.
So truthfully, Make the Difference is probably my fave at this point, but it comes in a larger box. That's not pocket size.
Yeah.
So if we're going for the pocket sized ones, I really love Scout, even though I don't think it originated as an Oink game, but I like the Oink game edition.
The other edition is probably a small box too.
Yeah, probably. Scout generally is probably going to be pocket sized regardless of where you get it. I also really love Fafnir, which I am an evangelist for, and almost everybody I teach that game to really enjoys it, usually unexpectedly because people haven't heard of Fafnir as much. I'm trying to think if there are any others. I mean, I also like Nine Tiles and Deep Sea Adventure. Mm-hmm. I still haven't played that Rafter 5 game in person yet. I've only played the digital version of it, but I really want the physical version of Rafter 5. I think that will be...
I just played it. Really...
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was fun.
Oh, I'm jealous. It's
funny, too.
I mean, I like dexterity games. Fake Artist Goes to New York, also a classic Oink game that's super fun.
I remember it also, I like the Pyramid's Deadline, which is an older one. You're building up a little pyramid out of shapes, but then there's also some press your luck in it because you could not finish your pyramid and then get 0 points at the end. So I like that, like the spatial building thing, but also with the press your luck. And then I already mentioned Kobayakawa. I like that. It's a bluffing game, but it's very simple. You just bet one. I don't like the whole raising and stuff in poker. So it's like poker for people who don't want to deal with the stress of betting and raising and stuff.
I think the market for small games has, I don't know if it has grown, but it seems like publishers are getting better at learning how to make and market small box games. And now, especially as companies from Asia are starting to sell their games here in the States more, we're also seeing some of their games like Oink games and things like that come over. And I know that they are making sometimes different editions for the US market that are sold differently. Like, I know there's an edition of Scout that's being sold in Target that's in a different container. It's in a tuck box, I think, instead of the usual, like, with box with the lid, because that's what a lot of Americans, like, that play card games are more familiar with, right? Like, if you play Uno or Skip Bo or Crazy Eights or things like that, the tuck box, I think, is more familiar to people. So I wonder if that's why that is happening. But, you know, I've always kind of wondered, it's an interesting thing to market games that are small boxes. And I think the fact that game purchasing has become more and more prevalent online has only been a boon for these types of games, because if you were only buying games in a physical space, obviously it is easier to notice a Ticket to Ride sized box as opposed to a wallet game that is the thickness of 18 cards, right? Like, your eye is going to be drawn to the bigger, brighter, flashier things in a physical space, whereas online you kind of don't have that same competition between the visuals. So while I obviously support all of my friendly local game stores and definitely still like to shop in person when I can, I'm glad that there are a lot of online retailers that are offering these smaller box games. And I think it's pretty awesome that more companies are making smaller box games, because my collection's too big and I'm running out of shelf space. And if they're small enough, I can just shove them somewhere in the midst of the other game.
Yeah, our collection, it used to be like 100 games, and then we just started getting more, and then smaller ones too, just like fit them in, and it's like that got to 200, and like, whoops, it was full at 100, and now it's, we just fit a bunch of 100 more small games in there.
Obviously, it'll be too late for us to shove any extra games into our pockets for this convention, but if you all have any recommendations for pocket-sized games that we should put on our list to check out in the future, hit us up in our Discord. Link is in the show notes to join the Discord if you're not there already, or hit us up on social media, although social media is becoming an increasing wasteland in a lot of places, so really, Discord is the best way to get hold of us most of the time, I think.
And that's it for this week's Board Game Blitz. Visit our website, boardgameblitz.com, for more content and links. This episode was sponsored by Gray Fox Games. Available for late pledges for a limited time, Worlds of Midgard, two brand new games in the world of Champions of Midgard. Late pledge now to receive exclusive content. And if you want to buy games at grayfoxgames.com, you can get 20% off non-exclusive items by using the code BGBLITZ24 at checkout. Join the Blitzketeer community on Discord for game nights, discussions, and more by following the link in the show notes. support the show by leaving us a rating and review on your podcast provider. And if you like us a lot and want to support us monetarily and get some cool perks, check out our Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/boardgamelists today. Our theme song was composed by Andrew Morrow. Until next time, look around this room, lovely human. Is it everything you hoped it be? The wrong game and the wrong group of gamers. The right time to game with me. Bye, everyone.
Bye.